This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 125. Today, CJ and I are going to talk about Azure and Office 365 news around certificates, exporting ARM templates, usage reports for Office 365, and the April 2016 PMP release, as well as some other issues. Recorded live, April 13th, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid NL. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, Business Intelligence and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl.
Good day, CJ. How are you today?
I am very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Hey, this is we're trying something new out today. We got a lot of changes in store that we're working on for the podcast. We're using a new recording method today using a tool called Zencastr.
Yeah, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, so far so good. This is it's pretty slick. It's a web-based tool that doesn't require any install and just grabs the instance of a link to your microphone and saves the recording straight to Dropbox. So this is cool, being able to invite a bunch of people in.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to give it a shot. And people will probably notice some changes over the show over the next few episodes as well. We've got a few things in store for our format and a few bits and pieces we're going to try out. So we've got a few things cooking.
You'll definitely see a change in is that we've decided to we're going to keep some of the changes we're doing. We'll keep those kind of behind the scenes. As we do them, we'll let you know about them. But one of the things we are doing is that we are going to stop using Flipboard to share our links for the show. And now the links for the show that we mentioned during the show, we will have those not only in the RSS feed, so they'll show up in the description of the podcast feed when you take a look at it, but they will also show up on the page on our site and also get posted out using Twitter. So these will also get posted out throughout the week. So you'll see a lot more activity coming from the MS Cloud Show Twitter handle, and an easier way to get to our show notes and stuff that we mentioned. So that plus a whole bunch of additional changes you're going to see coming over the next few weeks.
Yeah, definitely.
With that, I guess the last time we recorded was just 2 days ago. Our listeners don't realize it, but the last week, just 2 days ago, we did our nice long hour-long geek out on the NASA social thing. So the show hasn't been released since we recorded it. By the time you hear this episode, it will be released. So let us know what you thought about that episode. We'd love to hear what you send us a tweet, go jump onto iTunes, and we'd love any 5-star reviews. It helps people find our show, and send any questions in. Let us know if you enjoyed that episode. We had a lot of fun recording it.
Yeah, definitely. We'd love to hear feedback on that. So definitely get in touch with us through the website or on Twitter or what have you. We'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. So, hey, it's just been 2 days. So got any updates for me? What you been up to?
Oh, man. Yeah. Working hard, actually, working away. We're grinding on a sprint right now, and I'm cranking a bunch of code, actually. So it's I'm writing some actually, weirdly enough, some Windows code, not Node, right now. So I'm writing some back in the C# world and in Visual Studio, and cranking out a WPF app, strangely enough. So I'm up to my neck in XAML and C# again for a couple of weeks.
Is that because you drew the short straw?
No, it's because I don't want to distract the other guys. I tell you what, though, man, I am thoroughly enjoying it, and I'm loving being back in Visual Studio with decent tooling and with ReSharper and stuff like that. Like, it's a pleasure.
Interesting. I'm working on a couple labs right now for a course that I've built for the Partner Center group. So I think I've mentioned this on a few previous shows where they released a new SDK and API, and I wrote a developer course for them and recorded some stuff. Actually, recently got published to Channel 9 so that people can learn about how to onboard their organization with the Partner Center and how to build a shopping cart to resell Office 365 and Azure resources for customers. But I'm also back in the Windows Visual Studio world because I'm having to build ASP.NET MVC sites for these different labs. And it's confirming that I do really enjoy the building sites using something like Node and Express a little bit more than ASP.NET right now. It just feels a little more cumbersome. I am looking forward, though, to trying out all the the ASP.NET Core stuff, which is a seems like a little bit of an approach that's a lot closer to what we do with in the Node and Express area.
Yeah, I guess I'm the bit that I'm talking about, or the stuff that I'm doing is like the C# and XAML for Windows, right? It's not the web side, so it's a little different. But yeah, it's nice to play around with.
Yeah, I guess one update that I did do in the last few days is that I recently upgraded my desktop, my desk setup.
Yes, yes.
Specifically, my monitor setup. I've got one or two things I bought along the way that should be showing up today or tomorrow that are going to help. But I went from having three 27-inch Dell monitors on my being driven by my MacBook Pro, so two horizontal left and right, and then one vertical right in the middle. And I changed that up to where I got rid of two of them, and I have replaced them with a 34-inch curved LED LCD monitor from Dell. And it is, man, it is crisp. It's like 3460 by 1440. It's not a 4K display. I found that I just didn't think the 4K is nice, but I would find that every time I looked at one, I was going to have to bump up the resolution anyway.
Yeah.
But this one is, I love the crispness of this display and the simplifying of my entire setup. I love how the monitor's got a little button on it to where you can do hot swap between inputs. And so I've got my Surface set up with it too. And it's really nice having a 34-inch monitor because I've got two instances of, while I'm building this lab, it's great to have two instances of Visual Studio up side by side. And it's like they're each in their own 17-inch monitor. And it's fantastic.
Gotcha. That sounds nice. Yeah. And you have no bezels between monitors. So
yeah, bezels are for sissies.
One nice big clean desktop to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. I did keep one of the 27s and set it off to the right. That's setting up vertical. So it's great for like Outlook, and actually it's great for code and like a terminal window and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm absolutely loving the setup. So just now need to get the cable management all cleaned up. I finally decided that when I make a big change in my desk, don't worry about cable management. Just get it hooked up, make sure you like the setup, and then go clean the cables up later.
Yeah, gotcha. Nice.
So, hey, we got a few bits of news here.
Yep.
That we want to run through. I know there's two Azure ones that really stuck out to me that I was looking forward to. One is actually a response to something that I posted on the User Voice for Azure. And that's a couple of episodes ago. We talked about something called the Azure Resource Manager, or the ARM templates that you can create to go provision a bunch of resources. One of the challenges in working with this is that you have to go create a brand new template, pass in some parameters, and get everything to work, but you're doing everything from scratch. One of the features that I asked for is that when you do this, you always create a resource group and then pass in a template in the parameter file and say, go build up all the stuff inside this resource group using this template. What's neat is that they have recently put out a feature that now you can go to a resource group and say, export everything in this resource group as an ARM template. So that now you don't have to go write the template from scratch. You can actually use the WYSIWYG or the designer or whatever, the portal to create all of your resources inside of a resource group. And now just say, export the template for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
That'll be pretty smooth. It's a nice step forward for Azure, but like I think I've mentioned before on the show, better tooling around them would be awesome. So.
Yeah,
it's a nice addition.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I've got one on the. Should we continue with Azure, or are you cool with switching to Office 365 briefly?
Jump to Office 365. I'll come back to Azure on the next one.
Okay. So yesterday there was a blog post about OneDrive and their spring updates. So it was written by Jeff Teeper, and there's a video in there by a good friend of mine, Ruben Krippner, from the Office team, about improvements coming to OneDrive. So they've. You can go read the blog post. We've tweeted it out, and we'll stick it in the show notes as well in the description of the show. But there's six or seven, I'll give you them in quick fire, rapid succession, improvements coming for OneDrive. And we know that OneDrive, for business especially, has had a bit of a sketchy past in terms of working. So these are all, or mostly I should say, towards making a better experience for the product working. So I'd say here they are in quick succession. Windows 8.1 support. So, you know, for people that are on 8.1, as well as 10, 7, and 8. Office 2016 integration. So better integration with the Office clients for real-time co-authoring of documents. So using OneDrive for Business as a location where you can save those docs and have co-authoring working. Improved setup. Now, this one was an interesting one. Because right now, with a new sync client for OneDrive, you've got to open a terminal window on a Mac or registry keys on Windows to install it, which I think I moaned about on the show a number of months ago, which I just thought was like completely ridiculous. But now improved setup means no more registry keys needed to manually set up and no more terminal on a Mac to add. Seamless client integration, pausing sync. This was an interesting one. So you know how Dropbox, you can pause your sync. Mm-hmm. And on OneDrive, you can pause your sync. Dun, dun, dun. Like when you're on an airplane and you're chewing up all the bandwidth for the whole plane. Yeah. View files online. So you can right-click on docs and say view online. And so say a Word doc would open in the browser. Sync any file type you want. So they've taken away some of the restrictions around things like JSON files, ASPX files, Shockwave files, things like that. IT can block file types. So if they don't want MKV files full of pirated movies, then they can block those. And then performance and reliability problems. So this is improvements, sorry. So a bunch of fixes and improving sync. So slow but sure progress towards a better sync experience for OneDrive for Business. That's in the spring updates.
For a lot of those updates are, it sounds like they're kind of bringing like feature parity of what we can, stuff you can do with like Dropbox, or you can do with like the Google Drive client, like things like, you know, no blocking of, or the file types, you know, it doesn't really matter what kind of file it is, they're all going to get uploaded, the pausing of sync, stuff like that.
Yeah, there's some weird background behind those ones. So if anybody like knows about OneDrive for Business, it's backed by SharePoint, and uploading things like ASPX files to SharePoint, there's some security concerns with that. So there was some work to be done to not end up in a bad situation with some random file types.
Gotcha. I've tried, I don't know, I didn't hear much there that would cause me to kind of jump back, unfortunately. I mean, I did try OneDrive for Business for a little while and the last few months. And after about 2 or 3 months, I kept running into stuff and kept getting errors on sync and stuff like that. And finally just switched everything back over to Dropbox. So
yeah, I keep it running and I keep dropping files in it every once in a while and seeing how things go, just to see how they're doing and check out the improvements, but I don't count on it day to day.
Yeah, that's my experience too. I still count on, I kind of a mix between Dropbox and Google Drive because I use the Google apps a lot.
Hey, I share a tip with you. Put your OneDrive for Business sync folder in Dropbox.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And then if your OneDrive for Business sync stops working,
Dropbox still works.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, I beat them up, but they sort of deserve it.
Yeah, well, they definitely deserve it. So I've got one. This is around Azure. This is relatively new. I guess this is new as of late March. But one of the things you can do now, you could always, Azure Web Apps or the Azure App Service gave you the ability to bring your own SSL certificate that you purchased from a VeriSign or GoDaddy or one of these other cert authorities, and it allowed you to bring it and install it inside of your Azure Web Apps. But now one of the things that Microsoft has done, and I wonder if this is a bit in reaction to what AWS,
the Amazon one,
offered.
Yeah.
Yeah. They offered this recently. I think we covered it on the show a few episodes ago, but now you can now buy a SSL certificate straight from your Azure portal now. So you don't have to go leave some other site and go purchase a certificate and then bring it back in. Now everything's nice and fully automated. That makes it a lot easier and much better experience for your users here.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I've been through this a number of times, right? And it is such a pain in the ass to do if outside of, you know, I'm stoked they've added this feature because previously, you had to go create your certificate request. Then I've used GoDaddy for certificates. So you got to go create your certificate request, you know, through IIS or OpenSSL or something like that. Then take your certificate request and upload it into GoDaddy and then get the certificate issued. Then download it in the right format. And usually I'm no IT pro, right? So I download like all 5 different formats of the certificate because I can never tell which one I'm supposed to download. And then start trial and error uploading them into Azure, right? And it is such a pain in the bum. So I'm stoked that they've added this because it's it'll really streamline those things. I'm not so sure it's going to be all that important for businesses. Certainly for individuals and startups that just want to quickly get certificates in there. Most businesses have a sort of a prescribed way of certificate management, or they should have a prescribed way of certificate management within the company. So I don't know if it'll make much difference to those guys, but for everybody else, I think this is pretty nice.
Like for somebody like me, it's one of the reasons why I've avoided putting a certificate on my site. And I know that you look at it and say, are you doing any kind of business stuff there that do you really need a certificate? And the answer is no, not on like andrewcollin.com, but I know that, you know, now the general practice is everything should be SSL, even if it's just content. And even with just something like my blog, I planned on doing it because you see like Google gives better search rankings or better better ranks to URLs that are behind SSL. So it was one of the reasons I was avoiding doing it, because I just knew that it's like, it's one of those things that you're, I'm always scared to go do, like we're like paving your laptop and reinstalling it from a backup. You know that you should do it. You know, you should know how to do it, but I'm always scared to death to go about doing it.
Yeah. It's always a major pucker factor, as Elon Musk would say.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a very cool one to have.
Yeah, that's nice. Really nice. Okay, back on Office 365, patterns and practices. So this was a project started years back, and Vesa Juvenin from the Office team is leading the charge on this. And this was a project I supported when I worked in the Office 365 group, because it's so foundational to helping businesses do stuff with Office 365 when they're transitioning from on-premises, and how you go about doing things in a repeatable, safe, and manageable way. And so the Office 365 developer patterns and practices project you should definitely go and check out. But they have a blog post they recently posted up on the dev.office.com blogs. And again, we'll link to it in the show notes. It's about their spring, or April 2016 release. And they detail about, you know, what is the PNP project, patterns and practices, and what it attempts to do. And then some of the updates and stats and facts and figures that they've had over the last wee while. So there's links off to their webcasts that they've done. And there's some details on their GitHub repositories in terms of how they're doing with their main repository, their site's core repository, and their PowerShell repository. Yammer conversations and merges and pulls. And this project is picking up a ton of community support, which is really nice. And they do these monthly community calls that you can tune into and listen to, where Vesa and core members of the team get on and talk about different things. So, for example, Waldeck got on and talked about quick contact sample in the April 2016 monthly call. And then Waldeck's actually posted about that and tweeted about it recently as well. But it's definitely, it's a fantastic project. If you're looking for repeatable and safe ways to do things as you move away from full trust code and into the cloud and doing things in a safe way, it's definitely a project you should check out.
I thought that one thing that was really interesting from this is they published the results of a community survey that they did.
Yeah.
This was for an open survey for customers and partners around PNP. They got 184 responses. So, I mean, not a huge sample size, but still, you know, a pretty good response rate. Now, they asked a couple questions here, and they've got four of them highlighted in the blog post where it talks about this update.
Yeah. These are fascinating.
Yeah. So first question, each one has three different answers. So what is your primary development platform? So 51% said both Office 365 and SharePoint on-prem. And then it was split about evenly between 25% and 24% respectively on-prem and Office 365. So we see like 75% of the developers that are out there are either working on both or Office 365, or the other side as well. You can flip it around the other side. So 75% are doing both or just on-prem. So it's
yeah, awesome. I would say the interesting way to put that is 75% of these people were in the cloud.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is huge, right? That's a staggering number.
Absolutely. So these next two were quite one-sided. Should Microsoft continue investing or increase investments on the PNP initiative? 67% said, absolutely, it's core for our business. 33% said, yes, we clearly see the value. 0% said, no.
No, we're not interested. Yeah.
The third one, that was a good question too.
Yeah. Would you recommend using PNP assets to your customers, partners, and colleagues? 98% said yes. 2% said no, and 0% said not defined. I don't know what that means. But anyway, 98% yes. That's incredible. I mean, admittedly, they're surveying people that are already using the project. So in theory, they're already getting a ton of value out of it, which so it's no surprise. But then the last question, has PNP guidance helped you or your company to adapt or move to Office 365? And 75% of people said yes, which, you know, makes me smile, because when I was on the team, we put a lot of funding towards this project to help get it off the ground right in its early days by taking real-world guidance from migration projects that Microsoft was doing with its SharePoint Online dedicated team to Office 365 and turning that into guidance and helping get that stuff written up. So it's really nice to see that it's paying off and that people are finding it useful and that it's taken a life of its own since then, and in no small part due to the tireless work of Vesa and his team.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, it's great to see that. There's a bunch of additional updates too that you'll find in the update that we'll definitely link to. There's a bunch of new samples and new solutions that are available in the PMP library. There was a bunch of changes to the provisioning engine and a bunch of additional articles. And like you said earlier too, it was a nice long list of a bunch of things that were in the, a bunch of updates that were around like a video training pack that they that they offered.
Yeah, they're also starting a JavaScript special interest group.
Yeah, interesting.
As part of NPNP. So this is for JavaScript developers that want to chat with the team. They're running an office hours sort of recording webcast-y type thing, I guess, for want of a better word. And that special interest group is specifically targeted at JavaScript development for things like SharePoint client-side development with JavaScript and, you know, interacting with APIs through JavaScript and such.
Yeah, they've also got a schedule here for a bunch of weekly webcasts that they do, and they actually looking back at it with links to all the recorded ones that you can go back and watch. So
there's a ton of content out there for this. It's fantastic.
It really is. It's fantastic for enterprises, especially those people who are going from on-prem to 365. A lot of help with this.
Tons. Yeah. That's cool.
I have a quick news bit too.
Yeah.
That was announced earlier this week, and that was around the Microsoft Ignite conference later this September. So the Ignite conference, which was massive show last year of 20,000 plus people, is in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States, the week of September 26th through the 30th, and it was announced that Satya Nadella is going to keynote the show. Now, they didn't really say too much of detail what he was going to speak about, or, well, I guess they did say that, quote, he will provide his unique perspective on the technology trend shaping the future of business and enabling powerful new ways for people and organizations to work, which, end quote, which is basically saying, we're not entirely sure what he's going to say right now, but it'll change by the time it gets to September, when there's no sense in planning what he's going to say right now when this business changes so quick.
The tagline and the image in the blog post that they put up about this says, Satya Nadella shares his vision of future of tech. That's pretty open-ended, but he's always great to see talk. Really interesting guy. And I'm surprised they had to announce this, because I kind of assumed it would be happening anyway.
I was going to ask you, you guys are going to be there?
Absolutely. Hyperfish is a silver sponsor of Ignite, so we will be there in a big way.
Huh. Do you get a spoon with it as well?
Sorry, who do I get to spoon?
No, never mind.
We're a silver sponsor there, so we'll have a booth, and we're launching some product there. So we're looking forward to it big time. I just hope they don't move it again. It was going to be, where was it?
Chicago.
Was it going to be Chicago? Yeah, it was going to be Chicago. That's right. Like it was last year. Mm-hmm. And they moved it to Atlanta. And I had this feeling the other day that they might move it again.
Mm.
And I was like, well, I'm not sure they will, but it's a possibility because of all of this whole LGBT stuff going on and conversation going on about various states supporting.
Oh, that's right.
Supporting the rights, you know, human rights of, the LGBT community, and Georgia is not exactly up there on the awesome list in that regard. So I'm wondering if they're going to pull a Swiftie and move it, but we'll see.
I think that was the governor. I might get the states mistaken, because I know there's a few states that are going through this right now, but I think that the Georgia governor, while there was an initiative to pass a bill around it, that the Georgia governor said that he was going to veto it. So I know it affected the NFL, even had it impacted them, because they were looking to put the Super Bowl in Atlanta again in the next few years, and they flat out said that's going to impact it.
Wow, that's fascinating. Yeah, Salesforce pulled out of Georgia. So Mark Benioff said, I'd leave Georgia over gay rights, and that he was going to pull out all of his staff out of Georgia and all this sort of stuff. And so, yeah, it's a big deal right now in the news.
Yeah, quite a big deal.
Yeah, so that's Ignite.
We got another one here? Do we have one more news of it?
Yeah, sure. There's one more about usage reporting for SharePoint and OneDrive, Yammer and Skype. So this is a new set of reports available to Office 365 customers. There's a new reporting dashboard in the Office 365 Admin Center, which give you a better sort of visibility into what's going on in your environment. And so there's an activity dashboard, which they say here, provides you with a high-level overview of how many people in your organization are using Office 365. And so you can go in and pick through that and see who's using what and so forth, and see different activity data, email activity, the number of emails flying around your organization, in and out, all that sort of stuff. Office activations, so when people are using the client licenses and signing into Office 365, be able to go see that. SharePoint site usage reports and consumption details. OneDrive for Business usage report, same thing, Skype for Business report, you know, so you could see minutes spent in conversations, things like that, IMs and calls, and then Yammer as well. So various breaking out likes, reads, and post activities. This is really nice because each of these different silos has had parts of this in the past, but the new reporting report center, I think they call it, in the admin center, pulls it all together in one nice sort of dashboard where you can flip through a bunch of pre-canned reports, pick your timeline, and go see these different details. So it all pulls it together, and you can see how your adoption is going.
Absolutely, yeah. This was good to see this. It was something that... It was a bit of a gap. The dashboards look really nice in terms of seeing all the kind of traffic and all the activity that's going on within your Office 365 environment. So it's fantastic to have this now. It really brings it out to see what people are using within your organization without you having to go write all your own custom stuff to look at audit logs and all that stuff. So
exactly, yeah. And a key piece to making Office 365 successful is getting your users adopting it. So this is a nice way for you to be able to, you know, run a campaign internally on, you know, it could be a training thing or it could be an awareness thing internally to a company, and then seeing how that impacts your usage and if people are using various services more.
Absolutely. Hey, I know a couple of episodes ago, we talked about a couple of changes that were going on in the Office 365 team. And I know one of them I know that we had announced was had already been publicized, and that was, I think, I try to remember which ones we covered back then, and I know there have been...
It was Jeremy, and then I hinted at more coming.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, Jeremy Thake had decided to go over to the Azure team and work on marketing for around the app service stuff, which will be, that's going to be a fantastic move for him, fantastic job for him. Big loss for Office 365, but huge gain for the Azure guys.
Yeah.
Another big change that we had too was Dan Holm.
Yes.
Joined Microsoft, and he's, I think, director of marketing for SharePoint now.
That's right. Yep. That's a huge win for the SharePoint team. Getting Dan, you know, he's one of the biggest and longest serving advocates of SharePoint in the community, and fantastic guy. And he's going to run the SharePoint marketing team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is awesome. Yeah, and then the last one, we had Sonia Koptev off my old team from Office 365. She was on my team along with Jeremy and Dave Pay and those guys. So she is moving to the commercial communications team, running commercial comms for the DX team inside of Microsoft, which is the developer experience team that Steve Guggenheimer runs. So they run build and those things, all the developer outreach in the company, things like that. So she's moving on to that role, and it'll be great to see what she does there. It's you know, obviously I'm biased. I love it that she's doing a dev related role. So, but in some respects, it's a real mixed bag for me, because it's a couple of team members that I worked with and that I had a great working relationship with that have moved from Office 365 to other things. So I'm sad in that regard, but very, very happy to see them move on to other interesting things.
I'm very happy for it. It's a good move. I think it's for everybody who may not be familiar with some of the stuff, she's really been the one who's been behind all of the Office 365 presence at all the major conferences in the last couple of years. She owned Ignite, she owned Build the last 2 years for Office 365. Yep. And I know she's been involved in a lot of other parts of those conferences, not just the Office 365 stuff. I know she was also pushed a lot of new ideas for how of things to do at a conference, but also like the Women in Technology initiatives too with at Build. And so it was really cool to see that stuff. And I'm really happy for her. I think she'll do absolutely fantastic over there.
Yeah. So congratulations to Jeremy and Sonia and Dan.
Maybe the times are not finished on all the changes here. We got May the 4th is coming up, and we may even see more stuff by then, right?
Who knows? Exactly. Yeah. Hey, have you got some picks?
Oh, I'm glad you asked it. Yeah, I do. I've got two picks on this one. I already mentioned one of them, and that's the monitor that I picked up for my desk. It's a if anybody's interested, it's the Dell U3415W. So 3415W. It's one of the ultra sharp 34-inch curved monitor. It is phenomenally awesome. It's
nice.
Got, you know, Thunderbolt connections, or I guess mini display port, normal display port, HDMI. It's got a USB 3 hub baked into it with two powered upstream ports on it. Yeah, she's a bad boy. I love him.
Excellent.
My other pick too is it's a bit of a continuation from last time, but hey, since we recorded our Space Geek Out, it got updated with some really cool stuff, and that is the SpaceX Flickr account. They do a phenomenal job posting a bunch of pictures there. I'd also, I guess, honorable mention to the SpaceX YouTube channel. And what's cool about this is that they recently took the ship came in. Elon's going to, CJ and I made a reference to this last time about it being a joke. Elon takes a very strong issue with you calling a barge, because a barge doesn't have engines. A barge is towed around, and the drone ship has four independent engines that can do can cycle 360 degrees to maintain the ship on station.
Yes, yes.
Absolute GPS position, so when the rocket comes down, it can land well. So anyway, since we recorded our last episode, it had made it to Port Canaveral, and they've already removed the rocket from the drone ship, but they also pulled the cameras off the drone ship, got the pictures off, got the best ones, and you could see like a time lapse of the rocket coming down and landing. And they are super high res pictures, and they are freaking awesome. Got a few of them rotating as my background now.
Yeah, they're beautiful. There's some nice high res shots of it coming in and landing, and that's pretty sweet.
How about you? You got any pics?
Yes, I do. I've got two. One sort of tech, and they're both tech, but one specifically tech. Trace. So there's a new application from risingstack.com called Trace, which is for node developers, is pretty sweet. So this is the ability to trace, track, and monitor requests through your microservice-based application. So you can see request times that come into your different services and that bounce between your different services. And so you can track where requests go and how long they take between, you know, all these different moving parts of your application. You know, one of the downsides of a microservice-based architecture is tracking and tracing requests as they move through your system between different processes and different parts of your application on different nodes potentially and different places. And so having a good system for tracking, logging, and tracing is super important. And so trace.risingstack.com is a new tool to help you with that. And it's early days for it. They've just launched it, but it looks really interesting. The only caveat with this is that right now the tracing only works for HTTP requests between services. So you'd have to do like web requests between services. Whereas in our case, we're using RabbitMQ for queuing, for asynchronous task delegation between services. And we're also using Thrift, which is an RPC message passing protocol between services as well, which is its own protocol. So apparently they are working on non-HTTP based communications too, to be able to pass the request IDs around and stuff like that. But anyway, trace.risingstack.com.
Have you used this yet? I've been following this as well, and it looks really cool.
Not an Angie yet. I haven't used it in our application, but been playing around with their demo and taking a look at it. And I just want to keep a track of it. We can't use it until we can track requests across queues and across Thrift message passing, because that's the way we talk between our services. We don't use HTTP REST calls between our services.
I wondered if I saw where you could build like custom reporters and stuff for them, and I wondered if there was a way that you could take advantage of that and kind of mimic the same kind of thing you were doing. But
yeah, possible. Yeah. So that was the first one. The second one is this cool article called First Human Tests of Memory Boosting Brain Implant, A Big Leap Forward. So apparently there's these dudes that are trying to put basically an SD card in your head. And so what they're doing is research on being able to read your memories, store your memories, and then replay your memories back to you at a later time.
Whoa.
By watching what's happening in your brain. And so they are running a trial. They've already got some participants, 12 patients, who already have electrodes in their brains for epilepsy tracking. So these are patients with epilepsy already, and they're tracking or able to try and start reading certain memories from different parts of their brain and then replaying those signals back into their brain at a given time to see if they can sort of replay things. And so they're doing tests like showing them a series of pictures and then doing recall tests, you know, 90 seconds or a couple of minutes later, and seeing if there's any difference. If they're able to replay those images back into their brain at the right time, they're able to recall more. And how cool is that? So this will eventually lead to you be able to put like a, you know, maybe a couple of terabyte SD card in the side of your head and remember more.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? It's a long process. Obviously, they're a long way off it, but they first had to kind of decode how memories are stored and played back, and you know, it's kind of like reverse engineering a protocol, you know, watching the wire and then trying to reverse engineer those things so they can store them and then obviously replay them back again a little later.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Yeah, definitely going to put that link in the show notes there for everybody to take a look at.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
Awesome. Well, hey, cool, man. Good show. Filled with lots of news here, lots of updates and everything and a couple links. So, yeah, I just hope everybody enjoyed the show. And again, we would just like to ask if you got any questions, if you've got any show recommendations or show requests, interview requests, please reach out to us. You know, find us on Twitter at MS Cloud Show, or you can post something to us on our site. But again, too, we would really appreciate anybody that jumped out to iTunes and left us a review. Don't have to even say anything. But of course, we really appreciate the 5-star reviews. And what those do is that really helps people find our show to get additional listeners in on the show, to get additional attention and some other inputs and stuff. So we'd really, really appreciate anything that anybody can do around giving us a review.
Yep, absolutely. And last comment on, we're still looking for sponsors too. So obviously we have Valid, who are fantastically stepped up to help us support the show and get it produced and things. And if anybody's interested, we can provide you statistics on our download numbers and where people are listening and how they're listening and all that sort of stuff to help back up your decision. So get in touch with us about that.
Absolutely. Well, hey, thanks a lot, CJ, and we will chat again next week.
Have a good one.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.